I do my teaching, I move around a lot, so if you can't hear me, just throw your hands up. If I end up migrating away from the podium, I will try and stay by the podium.
Okay, Dana's going to give us our next talk, so I'll let you introduce yourself.
All right. My name is Dana Oleskowitz, and I'm very, very pleased to be here today. For those of you who have not had the opportunity to speak with me at this conference, I am a new Christian. So if you had told me 2 years ago that I would be at a conference where we were talking about God and science at the same place, I would have told you you're nuts. So if I end up getting a little emotional up here, it's because it's a very emotional experience for me today. It's not because I am not an experienced orator. It's that I'm holding back tears, so please bear with me. At one point, as a non-believer, would have thought that serendipity or coincidence had brought me to this talk right before Bill's talk, or right after Bill's talk, because he kind of set the stage for what I'm going to be talking about today. And now I know that it is God who does those things for us. So I hope that I can elaborate a bit on what he was talking about, because my personal journey, I think, reflects very much what he was discussing as far as bringing this into the churches and talking about it. Because by not doing so, those that are struggling with this, as I did as a youngster, do not get the information that they need. They don't have the maturity to go elsewhere for their information if they're getting that information from their church. Now, today, people have the opportunity to go to the internet. So they do have other sources. I was, unfortunately, just given what my church was giving me, and that dichotomy of either the Bible or science was very strong. And so I had to make a choice, and I'll speak a bit about that in my formal talk. So let me just kind of give you an overview of what I'll be discussing today. First, I want to define the issue and give you a little bit of background and what my career has been working in citizen science, working in participatory decision-making in the environmental field. And using that as a model as we think about now, my career's been on this trajectory. I really feel very strongly that the Lord is telling me to use those talents now to a different audience, being the Christian audience. So using some of what I've learned and putting that in the context of faith. So I will finish up my talk then about just a couple. I tend to think in pictures, so I have a couple of conceptual models that might be helpful as we talk to the Christian audience, for those of you who might be pastors or working with students that are struggling with this, because the essence of science really is not understood. And so that's what I can bring to the table is kind of, how can we conceptually put this into an ideal that will make it more understandable for the general audience. My career has been defined by taking very complex, technical, scientific information and bringing it to the lay audience. And then I will finish up with just a kind of an integration of the different worldviews. I probably don't even need to use this slide here today, but it sets up for the next slide. What is basic research? Well, we have this planning stage where we have a question that we pose, and then we conduct the experiment, we process the information that comes out of that evaluation, and then we evaluate what we find. In my field, it's really an applied application. It's not basic research. What we're doing is working with communities. Communities that have an issue with their natural resource, specifically as water, what I work in. And it is having the community members, particularly the landowners, those that can make the decisions on what they're doing on the land that's going to impact the water, getting them involved in the whole process. So it's even the designing the research. What's the research going to be like? What's the problem? How do we then collect that information? I work very intimately with the citizens in training them. How do you collect the water samples? We use a second disc. I won't get into that. That's a different talk. And then what do we do with that information, that data? So it is taking the citizens and having them actually do the science. And as we know, when you perform something, you understand it much better than if you're just told the information. So I think that's really important when we think about faith and science. Can we get the faith community involved in doing science? And this is one, I think, avenue that we can do. So just to kind of set the stage, probably many of you in the education field in science are aware that the science literacy is really lacking here in the United States. In fact, the NSF did a published an article that took a look at the science and literacy and technology, and we are slipping as far as when you look at the rest of the world. So that is of concern for those of us that are in education. So what's really happened is, especially with the internet, the experts are no longer the experts. The people who have the opinions become the experts, right? When you do your Google search. And this can really lead to conspiracy theory. Bill mentioned the flat earth idea. Although this is anecdotal and I don't have any science to back it up, I suspect that the idea of a flat earth is growing because there are some sites out there with misinformation that's marketing to our young people. And so that conspiracy theory can become prevalent, and that we need to be aware of that. When we talk about opinions instead of facts, they are not one and the same, and oftentimes people don't understand this. You know, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I could say that the Cleveland Browns are the best football team out there. Now, that's my belief, that's my opinion, but it certainly is not backed up by fact, right? So, I mean, this is something that we really need to understand, that although a belief system is valuable, and individuals, I think that we need to defend the fact that people have different beliefs, if it's not backed by fact, we need to point that out. And then just bad information. Again, anecdotal, but I've done a couple of Google searches on these different topics, and typically what comes up is some really bad sites, bad sources of information. So that's something to keep in mind, is teaching our youth how to be skeptical about the information that they're getting and where they're getting it. Here's just a general mistrust of science. A really great article recently from the New Yorker about the mistrust of science, and I won't go into the article, but I left the URL here, so if you want to take a look at that. And then the other idea of this intuitive understanding. And Dr. Barrett, although he was addressing it in more of a scholarly way, I think that there's some real merit to that. And there was an article that was published by Ohio State University researchers that really took a look at this. What is it that causes individuals to not accept evolution as fact? And they found that it really was based more on an intuitive understanding. And what I mean by that, let's think about when we take a look at distance, measuring distance. For many of us in the United States, we intuitively understand what an English derivation of that is, not the metric, because that's what we grew up with using. So when someone moves into the science field and they have to start thinking in metric measurements, it's a bit different. You have to like retrain your intuitive understanding. So if someone grows up in the church, they have a very intuitive idea of what the world is like. And I think that can really direct what our belief system is. And then finally, you know, this clarity, being just clear on what we believe and what we understand. For scientists, that clarity, it's okay not to have clarity. But I think for a non-scientist, particularly someone who is in a faith-based community, that opportunity not to have complete clarity makes it difficult to make that pathway to really look at the science that's behind evolution. The other thing that I wanted to mention that's related to the work that I do is that we don't educate, we market. And this slide was an actual slide that was taken from a talk that I attended last week where a watershed initiative was being put into place and they were trying to drum up the support for it, and they actually brought in a marketing firm to do this. So as part of that process is education, but it's moving them through the steps. It's a continual process. We can never stop educating when it comes to natural resource management. And there's a public involvement process in that, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a couple of minutes. All right, so this is how we educate on science, right? This is the very simplistic method of a lot of times the type of education that people get is just to the high school level. They don't incorporate to that intuitive level because they aren't actually doing science. So they learn about these particular terms, they have a little understanding of what peer review and what publish or perish means, but then done, okay? So they can perform science when it comes to doing a scientific in their high school, maybe through a science fair, but really understanding science means doing it. So this really simple model, I think, is something that we have to address when we talk about educating the young people. So this, I think, is a better representation. I like to call it the essence of science. When you say scientific method or process, you kind of come up with, you know, those other graphs that I came up with, what I had up here. But the essence of science is understanding that there's much more involved than just that process of one particular study. So it's that exploration, discovery, it's having a community involved in that. Oftentimes, whatever is being funded for research is driven by what the society needs or what the community needs are. And then taking a look at what are the benefits and outcomes. And I put this slide up there. I don't expect you to read it. I know that it's rather small, but I just put it up here to illustrate that within each of these arenas, there's a lot going on. And I think that that is what is really not understood by the general public when it comes to understanding science. All right, so what is science? All right? For this audience, you all know it's gathering information. It's a tool that we use. It's not an ideology. It's a tool. But what's really critical in this tool is that we have to start out with what we know. So to do that, we have to agree on what we know to move it forward. So if we are not in agreement on what the process is, what the terms are, what the facts are, the whole process crumbles and falls. The other thing about science is it has limits. As we know, we can only test those things that are falsifiable. So that's the only thing that we can put into this machine of science. So I won't belabor the rest of it because of the audience being here, I'm sure that you understand, but I did want to point to the community endeavor, because this really is a community endeavor, and I think it really fostering that is even more important in a faith community. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about what I do when I work with communities called participatory decision making. If there's a problem in a water resource area, and we use what we call best management practices. What are we going to do on the land that's going to make the water better? And we go through this process where we have to bring all of the decision makers to the table. They have very diverse views, different objectives, different value systems, and we start talking. So we get through this divergent area as far as the ideas of what we can come up with as best management practices. And then we have this grown zone. The zone of we're just not understanding each other, we're not coming to a conclusion on what to do, and it's really important then to work through and facilitate that, and having an experienced facilitator do that is, I think, a very fruitful process. But eventually we get to the point when we work with a watershed group that we come to a conclusion on what that watershed planning is going to be and how we're going to implement that. So as I was developing this talk, I really felt that this type of process is really what science is all about, because we are basically in a massive way, a very sophisticated way, we are going through the process of participatory decision-making, where we have that grown zone where the scientists, the experts who know the best, talk about these issues until we get to the point of making a decision on what that known is. And unfortunately, in some instances where we have some resistance to some of the information, we continue in that grown zone. That grown zone is not happening in the scientific community, but within the community at large, society at large, we are in that grown zone. So how do we address that? So looking at all of the different disciplines within science. And I like to view this as a tapestry, where it's all linked together, and each of those disciplines rely on the others. And so to point out one of those disciplines and say, well, that discipline is wrong, but the others are right, I think is not a valid intellectual thought. And so we tend to trust that tool of science. We tend to trust that what is happening in these other disciplines also happens in, say, when we talk about climate change or evolutionary biology. So what about the trust of the tool? And I think that that's what this really comes down to, is not trusting the tool of science. And so here I can take a look at, okay, that process, that essence of science. What are those barriers that are causing this distrust of science? And how can we address it as educators in science? So there might be knowledge lacking or very inaccurate information, and I addressed that at the very beginning of my talk, where, you know, the Google searches are bringing up really bad information. So it starts with knowing your audience. And typically, in a setting like this where I'm doing a workshop, getting to know that audience is really important. Where's their knowledge level? And moving from there. It's ongoing. I mentioned that as well. You know, we never stop educating. We have to market the message of watershed protection, in my case. And then, what about the information sources? I did a stint as a professor at a college, and one of the things that I really felt was very important that I talked to my students about is, what is a primary source, what is a secondary source? What sources can we trust to be skeptical of information that's coming in? And that oftentimes, I don't think, is internalized, or the intuitive knowledge there is not there for some folks. The other thing that I always keep in mind when I'm trying to talk to audience is what I call the mom principle. And this is basically, if my mom doesn't understand it at 70 years old, then the audience may not as well. And so it's using language that can be understood by the general person without the information that I happen to have. So I might say to an audience, and you can compare these two, cyanobacteria produces microcystin and solendospermopsin with a lethal dose of 50, and it's a toxicity. All right, so you process that. Or I could say that killer algae in the water, right? So it's putting it in terms, okay, now when you say killer algae, you know, the general person's gonna know what you're talking about. All of those other technical words for someone that's not in the business of water management isn't gonna know what you're talking about. So it's keeping that really forefront when you are discussing things. A positive language, when I first became a Christian, and started, you know, at the time I thought I had to be younger in creation, because that was the only thing I knew as a youngster, got online and found a stark difference at times between the language that was used in talking about the young earth position versus, for example, what BioLogos does, the gracious dialogue. And I think that means a lot, to have that gracious dialogue and trying to stay away from the fear rhetoric that sometimes is used. Actively seeking the audience, going to where the audience is. And then wrap that message. Dr. Bowden in the plenary today did that. Can you identify how she wrapped the message? Does anyone tell? Go ahead, holler out. I like audience participation. You wrapped it in. She started out with her faith. She gave her message. And then she talked about faith again, knowing that she had an audience of Christians who would really value the faith message. So she had a concept that she was trying to teach, but she connected with her audience by wrapping it up in something that was very valuable to them. So in other words, as a new Christian, I need to learn the Bible, because I cannot go out and talk to a Christian audience without knowing the Bible, because I know that that is very important to them. What about the misperceptions and biases that are out there? Something that we all need to be aware of as individuals, that we have these biases. So addressing that intuitive understanding, that's something that I brought up earlier. Trying to understand, what are the intuitive understandings of your audience? Using familiar tools. When we talk to audiences and ask them to do some volunteer monitoring or citizen monitoring, instead of using ArcView or GPS units, go to Google Maps, because they're familiar with that. So what is a tool that we could use in a faith community, in a faith setting? Obviously the Bible. But we have to be really careful about keeping that line between science and the Bible. So the tool can be there in conversation, but being very clear on how the Bible can be used. Embracing diversity. I'm not going to go into that, because that was already talked about with Bill's talk. The assumptions. Not making the assumption that your audience is one way. Again, that was talked about in the talk right before mine. And then share that cost benefit. In the field that I work in, it comes down to dollars and cents. What's it going to cost us to implement these best management practices? For a cost benefit in the faith community, it would be believers. We want to share the gospel, share the good news, so that we can increase those that are believers. So that's the cost benefit, and putting the education in terms of that. So how do we involve the church? And I put this up here, but I haven't really formulated how to do that. But if we want the churches to understand science, we need to involve them in the process. And then just that resistance to personal beliefs. Listening more than talking, just by connecting. It's those personal relationships that we have. Seeking explicit and implicit values. Oftentimes when we're sitting in a room and a farmer's talking about, I don't want to take any of my crop out of using crop rotation, I don't want to do that. And explicitly he could be saying it's because I lose money if I do that. But understanding that there might be an underlying reason that he wants to be able to give his farm to his youngster, to his children. So that there's that implicit, those things that aren't really talked about, that I think as facilitators, it's important that we understand. Addressing the fears, because that fear rhetoric is so prevalent that we really need to address that as educators in science. Finding a champion, an insider. We oftentimes work with the Amish communities, so it's understanding that culture. Finding the leader within that community, oftentimes it's a church leader. And if we can get the message and get some buy-in with that individual, then that can trickle down to the rest of the community. So I think educating the pastors, which there are ministries that do that, educating the pastors so that it can trickle down. And then just building trust and partnerships. Can't say enough about that. It's relationship building. All right, so this next set of slides are going to be the kind of the conceptual models that have come to me through my research on this. And again, I think in pictures. So when you think of a scientific concept, and it's knowledge building on knowledge. So this particular cathedral might be, for example, climate change, which is one of the ideas that are rejected, or evolution. If each brick within that building represents one line of inquiry, then if we remove that brick because it's a faulty study design or we came up with the wrong conclusions, the whole concept is not going to crumble and fall. If the concept is not accurate, over time, enough holes will happen in the bottom part of that cathedral that the concept is going to crumble and fall. And I think as scientists, we trust this. We, you know, intuitively know this, that eventually science, you know, there's often a criticism that, well, science gets it wrong. No, that's a strength of science. That is why we as scientists do what we do. That is a real strength, that we are willing to go back to the drawing board if we get something wrong. And one of the other things that's very important in a faith community is to talk about that we cannot replace that brick with the supernatural. And I think that sometimes in the science circles, they're trying to do that, and that is inaccurate. You can't do that. It's not a valid brick. So I give you the example of Mary Schweitzer's work, where we had this intuitive knowledge that things decompose if it's soft tissue. And suddenly, through a different processing technique that she used, she found some soft tissue. And there were those within the Christian community who hollered, now we are seeing evidence of a young earth because of this particular one aspect. No, that's only one brick that we remove. We examine it again. We realize that there are assumptions that we did not anticipate or realize before. So we fix that brick and we put it back in. So that's the difference. It does not crumble the whole idea of an old earth. All right, this graphic, when you talk about reality or what we believe is true, science is only about falsifying information, right? We pop out what is false, and then through that process, we can get closer and closer and closer to what the truth is, at least what we can learn from science. We never reach it explicitly or exactly because we can't prove anything in science. We can only falsify. So that is the tool of science, and oftentimes that's not understood. This graphic is very meaningful to me because this is what brought me to the Lord, is I realized that science cannot disprove God. He is not falsifiable, therefore he can remain in that realm of possibilities. So I think it's really important as science educators that we teach good science, or how to identify good science. Because we cannot be experts on everything. But being able to identify what the process is, Are the inferences, is it circular logic that they're using? Is it predictable? Is it putting together models that actually work? And I think that that's really important. So when you have bad science, which is what I was dealing with as a youngster, is I knew the tools of science, and I knew that God was not connected to those tools of science. And I was being told by my faith community that the Bible and God were lumped together. And I knew that that was inaccurate. And I was evaluating the science that was being presented, and I recognized that it was bad science. So I rejected the Bible. And guess what got rejected right along with it? Because this message from the science community, or from the Christian community in some churches and some faith communities, is that they're one and the same, and they're not. We cannot use science to talk about God. So in the worldview domains, and this actually is a graphic that is similar to what Dr. Hugh Ross put up, and I had put this together before I saw his talk. But we have an overlap of the science and faith, the laboratory and faith, but we need to be careful that there is a line there. And I like to use an opportunity to take a look at a quarter having the two different signs, one side being faith, the other side being science. And we can't examine both of those sides at the same time or it becomes distorted, right? But both are valuable to us. So I think that that is really important, that we have a proper understanding of where science belongs. This is actually a graphic that I used when I taught at the college level. And at the time I was a non-believer, yet I was sensitive to this topic, being that I grew up in a Christian home. When you look at a picture like this, and God has made you to be a scientist, what pops out at you is probably the trees. You know, I think of the stomata underneath the leaves of the tree and how fascinating the photosynthesis is. That's what was meaningful to me as a scientist. Someone who's a theologian or a pastor is going to see that church, and that church is going to be really meaningful to them. So it's the merging of those two things. How different this picture would be if that church wasn't there, or if the leaves weren't there and it was just the picture. So recognizing that the diversity of individuals and who might be in your congregations, that we are all fearfully and wonderfully made by God, is very, very important. But also recognizing that what is important to us, and science was very important to me, and I was being asked to give that up. And I think that that's very important that we understand. So I'll leave you with a closing thought. Our worldviews are colored by our intuitive thoughts, which is based on our experiences. And it's not fully rich, because my life was not rich prior to becoming a believer. It was a pretty good life, but it definitely is more rich now that I can see that church in that picture and it means something to me. So we can catch all that there is to see when we ponder scientific knowledge within the context of faith. Thank you very much. And by the way, I put this picture up here. This is a children's book that is out right now, and I encourage you to share it with your children, because we want to address that intuitive knowledge, and so we need to start talking about evolution at a young age.
David, you want to come down here? Yes. So it's a lot easier for her to see you down here than on the stage. So any questions from the talk?
Yeah.
You explain that. I wasn't quite sure I understood what you meant when you said the supernatural is not a valid dream.
Well, I think sometimes we try and put into that hole that's put in science, we try to use God explanations. Or using intelligent design is a good example. Intelligent design is trying to basically talk about God as an explanation to creation, but it is an incorrect, philosophically and theologically, I think it's valid, but as a scientific question, it's not valid. So it's not a valid brick to put into that concept.
We have time for probably about one more question.
Saying that, you know, it's not about the thing. How do you reconcile with the community
of being combating that issue, we attempt to put God into the tool of science, and that is an incorrect way of doing it. But the Christian message should be loud and clear that we cannot falsify God. We cannot use the tool of science, but that does not mean that science is the only tool for reality. That, you know, and that was that quote that I put up there, that, you know, I don't use the scientific method when I'm in church worshiping. Just as much as I don't put God underneath the microscope, because that's not humility to place God underneath the microscope.
Thank you, Dan.